I was 36, going on 37, the first time I listened to a Dead podcast. It happened in the summer of 2017, a long time ago, but only if you measure in terms of years. I was living in a small internet province known as the Last Knock. There were only 1,281 listeners, maybe, give or take. But to me, it was the whole world. I am Johnny Numb, and this is my story. However, I share this story with my co-host in Sentimental Crime tonight.
Billy Crash.
Absolutely you are. And Billy, tonight we are talking about coming-of-age horror films.
Yes, we are.
This came sort of sprung serendipitously from our recent double features show where we were talking about the function of the coming of age film in relation to the movie Raw.
Indeed.
And I think it's an intriguing idea. And I think there is a lot of it in horror. There's a lot of this type of film, mm-hmm. which I think we more commonly associate with like straight comedies or dramas, I think is where we see this most often.
That's true.
Yeah. And I think to that end, Billy, because I wanted to look up some definitions of the quote unquote coming of age as a concept before we recorded tonight, but I didn't have the opportunity. Internet was down most of the afternoon at work, and that's kind of where I do my research.
I'm with you on that, man.
So I guess I'll pose you the question of just in your own interpretation, what do you think of when you think of coming of age, whether it's in a film or a book or just in your own personal experience?
Well, that's the thing. I think this is where art doesn't necessarily imitate life, but gives us a life that we wish we had.
Yes.
And that's because we no longer have a rite of passage as young people in this country, or actually in the Western world, and in certain parts of the world in general, a lot of those rites of passage are going away as well. We no longer are tested to prove our mettle as being worthy of manhood or womanhood. Mm-hmm. And so we live vicariously through the characters on screen who are faced with the other, something insane, something crazy, something that they could never really prepare for. They're suddenly being tested. Will they pass the test? If they pass the test, welcome to adulthood. And I think that's why they're so popular. I think that's why we root for them, because we didn't have that experience. I mean, you could on like a community type level in regards to, let's say, a bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, quintessera, and you for rich families, a coming out party, a sweet 16, crap like that. And I know in Japan, they do it right. When all the kids hit 20, they're considered adults. They're expected. It's a national day of celebration for 20-year-olds of that year. Wow. So you're expected to have a party with your family during the day, and you're expected to party with your friends celebrating your adulthood in the evening. So they have, as a nation, a rite of passage, and we do not. The Maasai tribe in Africa, to prove, like a young man, approved that he, well, a young person to prove he was a man, he'd have to go out and kill a lion. And they just stopped doing that because they're like, well, we know lions are endangered. We can't do that anymore. So that whole rite of passage now is lost. Wow. And you know there's going to be this crazy transitory gap where someone's like, oh, wow, back in my day, I had to kill a lion. These kids, they don't have to do shit anymore. He's a man? I don't think so. Then you're going to have I could see that whole thing happening,
Yeah.
And so we don't have it anymore. But our characters go through this. So many times we have characters that are like maybe introverted or, like in Excision. Silver Bullet, we have a young person who's in a wheelchair. you know, we have the geeky nerdy kids like in friggin' you know, Night of the Creeps and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it's like it's their turn to their time to step up. And yeah. They have that moment. And so many of us don't even get to prove ourselves. And we're not tested. So that's the way I'm looking at it, man.
That's a good point, Bill. I agree with, pretty much all of what you said, because I think there is an element of the vicarious when we watch a coming of age film. I feel like I've always been kind of susceptible to those types of movies, and maybe that was because I felt like maybe I didn't have a rite of passage.
Yeah.
Like you said, like in my own personal, you know, my formative years, it was more like, I just felt like I kind of just drifted in a way through my, you know, preteens and my teens. Right. And then you graduate high school and it's like, well, what do you do now? Oh, I guess I go to college. And then it's like, well, maybe college isn't for you. And then you go out into the workforce for a little bit. And maybe it's like, well, I don't want to be in the workforce, so maybe I should go back to school, sort of thing. I think these types of movies really speak to maybe the ones I plug into the most speak to a sense of confusion and, you know, not having a sense of belonging in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
It's like I can't relate to this world I'm in, so this cinematic universe with characters that and situations that may be exaggerated somewhat for entertainment purposes still speak to some fundamental truths about certain situations, certain aspects of growing up. And I mean, it's not horror, but the examples I immediately go to are John Hughes movies. you know, 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this funny list on the AV Club website. I'm sure it's from years ago, but I think it's 20 ridiculous lies perpetuated by John Hughes movies.
I love it.
Poor
John Hughes.
No, and I mean, I like these movies, despite the fact that I think to myself, yeah, these situations aren't necessarily realistic, especially something like 16 Candles. I can buy into the all day Saturday detention and just being bored in the library of The Breakfast Club a bit more than the stuff in Ferris Bueller or whatever. But
yeah, fascist anarchist, man.
But Bill, like, what about you? Did you feel like you had any rites of passage or anything that you can look back on in your youth and say like, yes, this was a point of transition for me where I was like, I have to make a decision or I have to somehow acknowledge the oncoming specter of adulthood. And I maybe was blindsided by it.
Well, I wasn't blindsided. It was actually a good thing. And when I graduated from college from Rutgers with my bachelor's, I was sitting there. You know, I remember a few things going through my mind. One is they were calling out everybody's name. They mentioned their, you know, major. And I sat there realizing I don't know anything at all, which I think is a really good realization. Yeah. And the second one was, what the hell was it? Like, what do I do now? And to make me feel better about all that, I came to the best realization of all. I was like, my parents didn't put me through school because my parents were making so much money. Well, my dad was making so much money at the time, which today is absolutely laughable money. I couldn't get a student loan. So I worked full time at night, went to school full time during the day, and that full time at night money went to pay for my college. So I didn't have a student loan or nothing. Every time the bill came, I went and took the money out of my bank account and paid.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, I earned this myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I did this on my own. And I was like, yeah. You know, it's like I felt really, yeah, C average, man. Yeah. You know, it's like, because at the time, I mean, yeah, when you're working full time at night, you don't have, you know, my money. Oh, man, I had like, you know. thanks to my mom, you know, I learned how to make $5 stretch for a week, and back then it really went far, and now it doesn't, but So that was like the only time, and it took me to be like 21 to realize that.
Yeah, and I mean that sounds about right, Bill. I mean, it probably happened even later for me. But you know, it's interesting, and I'm not going to get too personal about it, but I think when I started to realize that things were changing and I was entering into adulthood proper, there's also, I think, an aspect of emotional response to it. Like you, mm-hmm. as a little kid, and I'm sure the psychology books have stuff to say on this, I'm not sure if I'm saying it properly, but just the fact that you don't really have a developed sense of like a moral compass per se. Everything is in service to you. It's like if everything is not in service to you, there's something wrong when you're a little kid. It's like, give me this gratification. I want this. Just give it to me. I don't care about how you feel about it because I'm not thinking about that. Just right. Give me that toy. Give me that cheeseburger at the drive-thru because I say so. You know,
I want a burger.
I don't want to eat your home-cooked food, Mom. I want to go to Wendy's, that sort of thing. Yeah. Which I look back on like years later. I'm like, geez, I was such a little asshole. And it's like, why would any parent want to have – why would any grown-up want to have kids in the first place? But when I was in my late teens, my mom got diagnosed with cancer, and it was around that time there was like sort of this delusional state I was in of – it's like, oh, she'll be fine, you know.
Right.
These things work out in the end. And I don't know when she was properly diagnosed with it, but she passed away when I was 19.
Sorry, man.
No, it's okay. but I think it was kind of like that was a real. It was kind of surreal, actually, you know, because when it happened, it was like, you know, I was like. It's something you don't expect to happen. You think to yourself, oh, it's not supposed to happen until you're much older. You know, you should be well grown up by the time your parents are, you know, kicking in at a rest home and, you know, living their sundown years kind of. And
right.
This was kind of, you know, abrupt. And I think I don't want to say it warped my worldview for a while, but it certainly made me like it put my brain on a different pathway of thinking a bit more. I started to think about the facets of existence a lot more. And gotcha. I guess how precarious a lot of things are and how subjective a lot of things are. So so maybe that was the transition point for me. I'm not sure, but.
No, it sounds pretty potent enough to me. I mean, one of the things that I'm noticing with a lot of students, I had a student today come in and she was like, I'm really nervous about giving the presentation today, this and that, blah, 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 blah. And obviously I'm not going to mention her name, and I won't go into details of what she experienced, but what she did in her life, something happened to her that was criminal, absolutely horrific, very upsetting in so many ways. It affected her physically, emotionally, and everything else. And I'm like, you know, this was in a first essay that she had given me. And I said, you told me this story. I said, do you realize how powerful you are because you've survived this, that you've faced adversity, that you've walked through hell and come out the other end? I said, you have to stand up in front of a class of people who are a good class of people. You know, they like you. You know, nothing negative is going to happen. You know, you're respected and appreciated. I said, there's no, you know, think of what you've been through. Don't think of it as a separate event, but think of it as the event that made you a stronger person. And don't let something like talking about a particular subject for 5 minutes in front of a group of people, let that tear you down. And so I think a lot of times, a lot of people don't even recognize their own, you know, rites of passage.
So, you know? So are you saying, Bill, that she was like
She was nervous about going up, and I'm like, nervous? I mean, like, after what you went through, you're like, you're friggin' Wonder Woman, man. Like, you know, it's...
Well, and even to, like, write the essay and to give it to you, I mean, you're the professor. You're not necessarily... Oh, it's like... It's not like you're sitting in a room in private with a friend who you've known for years. You know, that's a whole other thing as well. It's like...
Yeah, and, you know, that's just one story of actually several with many students who, oh, man, I can't get up there and do my paper and this and or read or, you know, like do a presentation. I'm like... But you, this X, Y, and Z happened to you, man, where a lot of people would have been institutionalized or would have died or would have killed themselves. Or I mean, you made it out. You're a survivor, man. And it's like men and women alike, you know, young men. And I always call them men and women because they're 18 plus. I'm like, you know, you're men, you're women. You know, I'm letting you know just in case no one's told you yet. You know, you're there. You don't need to. Get your driver's license to be a man or a woman. You don't need to get a bank account, a credit card. You don't need to be into debt. You don't need to have sex first. You know, I'm telling you, you know, now this is it. You know, you're it. You're an adult. And
well,
I don't know.
Yeah, Bill, was there any sort of, did you sense any sort of affirmation after you told her that? Did she feel more at ease or
a little bit, but she's sort of like, I don't know if I could buy into this yet. And I'm like, well, I said, just go. And she, her presentation was wonderful. She did a great job.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
But you know, and you know, this is why some of these characters in horror movies are so ring true to a degree, you know, Carrie looking at her and her subjugation, you know, of her mother and the fundamentalism, shoved upon her, the social awkwardness, ineptitude. And it's already, oh, man, she's a target, you know, and we see that in so many movies. You know, we see, gosh, even in friggin', you know, in The Lost Boys, you know, with the Frog Brothers, the crazy little Frog Brothers, you know, and it's like going against the cool older teen vamps, you know, and, you know, what they have to deal with being like, you know, the goofy kids, you know, who collect comic books with the crazy grandpa. And, man, what the hell else do we have here?
Well, I mean, there's also, I'm only mentioning this because someone on Twitter mentioned it recently, but the Craft.
Oh, yeah,
well.
I was absolutely the Craft. Oh, look at what happened there, you know, and then you have these, and then look how it affected their psyche, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's like, and that's the problem, like even with Ginger Snaps, you know, you go from being like the odd girls out. And then they're like, and then the one sister has some power, and it's like, okay, you know, it's like, I'm going to destroy, you know, it's like, no, wait, no. Ah.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to use my powers for evil. Yeah.
But then you look at really one of my, I love it. It's not the best movie on the planet, but it's one of my favorites. Cause it's like the Goonies, you know, going really, you know, horror style, and that's the Monster Squad. I know it's a comedy and all, but
sure.
You have these little kids, and then you have this one, you know, smoking teenager, and he's like, he's an outcast too, so he joins the group, and there's not any, you know, it's like, oh man, he's a douchebag, nah, he's okay, let him in the group, you know, and it's like, and they all work together, and, you know, everything's cool. And then you have, you know, people like an Excision, you know, you have the one character whose sister is cystic fibrosis, and, you know, so mommy caters to her. And, you know, mommy wants, you know, her other daughter to do something different and be different and everything else. And that just leads to a whole bunch of other problems. And, oh, man, I think it's par for the course, man. It's just.
Yeah. And I mean, Bill, something thematically, I guess, like just a question to you is.
Uh-oh. Bring it, man. Bring it.
Do you have any embarrassing stories from your puberty days?
Except that I hated it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I friggin' hated this whole, like, where is all this hair coming from? You know, like, no!
Yeah.
I still hate shaving, yet I don't, and I hate a beard, too, so I'm stuck in this purgatory for friggin' ever. You know, I hate that crap. You know, and yeah, like my voice would crack, you know, it's like, oh, my nipples hurt, you know, like crap like that. But I don't know, man. It's just like this. Okay, give me the puberty thing. But can I be hairless except for the top of my head, please?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way, honestly. I'm like, geez, this is it. There used to be a time when I was very self-conscious about that stuff, and now I'm just like, I don't. I'm 36 fucking years old. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you reach that point, you know.
My days of being a Calvin Klein model have long since passed. So, you know.
You know what's a cool cool coming of age story, because it's bizarre, and again, it's not perfect by any means. But mm-hmm. Lady in White from 1988, did you ever see it?
I have not. I think they're actually playing it at the Colonial Theater Friday soon. Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh man. They did some wild, unexpected stuff in that movie that I just didn't see coming. And it definitely has its creepy moments. I only ended up giving it, I want to see it again. I only gave it like 2.5 stars out of 5. But you have Lucas Haas as Frankie Scarlatti. And who else is in there that's cool? Was that me? I think I did something. Anyway, I heard a errant. I was like, no, it's the ghost in the attic where I'm at.
Exterminate.
Yeah, exactly. But the just for the cinematography alone from Russell Carpenter is just incredible, and it's a unique, it's a neat story. It's a, you know, definitely 1980s type story, and I don't know, something about 1980 horror movies have this feel, this color to them, this visual tone that like permeated like most of the good ones, and that's in here. Mm-hmm. And it has a creep factor, but it's this young boy who has to deal with this otherworldly presence, and it's interesting. It was something that happened in the school cloakroom like 10 years before this kid got there. Mm-hmm. And he hears this rumor that something happened. So he's like, well, I'm going to go find out what happened. So he's like, locks himself in the school overnight so he could be in that cloakroom to feel what might have happened. And it leads to a, you know, be careful what you wish for scenario. And mm-hmm. Let's just say he has to grow up really fast. You know, it's like,
wow, wow.
Frankie.
Well, and I guess this would have been this would have been like shortly after Lucas Haas was in Witness.
Oh yeah, like right, it should be right after, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, you mentioned that it's in. I mean, I know it's from the 80s, but was this movie a period piece?
Yeah, well? It was nice because it took place in 62.
Okay, I was thinking that because I've seen some snippets of the movie over the years, and I wasn't sure. And that's another thing. That's a good point you mentioned, because there are times when these coming of age films, they'll be set as period pieces, and in some ways, I'm wondering if it's like to invoke a nostalgia for the people who grew up maybe in the 60s or another particular decade, or maybe to make people who weren't alive in that decade mm-hmm. sort of cognizant of.
Yeah, well, I think you have to do that right, because, man, because that didn't happen when I was, you know, at that age, at that time, you know. and that's why I think, you know, because it's funny, like Stephen King, most of his books, they're so coming of age. You know, we just had It, and, you know, I mean, that man, if that isn't a coming of age horror movie, I don't know what the hell is. You know, Carrie and friggin', oh my God, I just had the other one in my head. I just went with Christine even, you know, to a degree. And it's funny because it is so important. We, especially in like high school and all, especially during puberty, we're running a gauntlet in the hallways, you know, like trying to find ourselves and whatever the hell that means. And what I think is really funny, though, is like growing up, it's like, where do I belong? And then later on, at least me anyway, it's like, I don't want to belong anywhere, man. I don't want to belong to any group, anything. I don't want to toe the line. I don't want to take a pledge. I don't want to, you know what I mean? I don't want a friggin' membership card. You know, I don't want to fit in a little friggin', you know, little container and, oh, this is where you are. I don't, you know. But it's funny, like when you're a kid, it's like, oh man, where do I belong? You know.
Well, and I feel like society in a way kind of imposes like, well, you're either this or you're this, and I mean, it doesn't help the way like public schools are, you know, just naturally the social strata breaks up into cliques just naturally, basically, even if you're one of the geeks, you're still in the geeky clique, you know, by default. So, you know, it's interesting. And I feel like, you know, when I was growing up, I feel like there was almost this weird pressure that I look back on as being more self-imposed than anything of like, well, what am I? How do I categorize myself? You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh man. I'm sorry. Go ahead. No, please.
Well, I was going to say, Bill, do you feel like who you are now is similar to how you were like back in your teens and early 20s, or have you changed as a person, or has your personality pretty much remained intact?
Interesting. Cause you just reminded me of another mini rite of passage. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, I would be bullied and all that crap. And then at one point in high school, I just said, I remember once, and this was before that. So it was like two little rites of passage for me. One, these three kids were coming up to me and they were going to kick my ass. And I just remember going, I just remembered like holding up my hand and saying, stop. Mm-hmm. I said, guys, man, look at me. Am I a challenge? I mean, and I just started, it was like, I was like, I'm talking myself out of this, getting my ass kicked. And I did. And they were like, what the fuck? And they were like, you know, and they left me alone. And then when I was in high school, this one guy was really getting on my nerves. And I just like, you know, I don't know, years of rage or whatever. And I just went nuts on him. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, all right, you know, and then that was, you know, I learned, you know, you act a little crazy, you know, people back off because they don't want that challenge. They want like a lion isn't going to go after the strongest, you know, prey to eat. It's going after the weakest prey to eat. It doesn't want to work that hard, you know. And so it's like, okay. And that and my confidence grew from there and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah. And something I think is, you know, that reminds me of a story, Bill, or a Calvin and Hobbes cartoon, you know. Because Calvin was always getting beaten up by Mo the bully. And there's this one where he actually gets the better of Mo by sort of presenting Hobbes as though Hobbes is real. And of course, Calvin thinks Hobbes is real. So he's like saying, yeah, come out and pet Hobbes. Yeah, he'll be really friendly. He won't bite you or whatever. And Mo immediately starts to think Calvin's playing some sort of trick on him and somebody's watching. And he just essentially runs away, you know, intimidated by this stuffed tiger. So it was kind of like your story there. But, you know, Bill, when I was younger, it was bizarre for me because I felt like I kind of treaded the line between two worlds because I had friends or people I could talk to that were considered quote unquote popular. And then I had the people who were, you know, considered less popular or the dorks or whatever that I could also talk to. And it wasn't like, I don't know. It was weird that I felt like I didn't have an allegiance to really either subset of people. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, cause I think I'd put up with some of the same shit you probably put up with going through school just by default, just cause we all got to take gym class and we all hate it. If we're not a jock, so
I don't want to swim. I can't, you know, get the note from your mom. Billy can't swim because he doesn't like the water. And if you put him in a pool, I'll fucking kill you. Because that's how my mom didn't say that.
Well, Bill, I don't want you rolling on the grass because you know what that does to your allergies.
Yeah. I think this is why I like that the Goldberg so much, man. It's like balls, you know, it's like, oh, man, dude. I would have so been hanging out with that kid.
Yeah.
And I would have been, your mom's hot. Get out of my house.
Well, you know, another theme that runs through the horror coming of age films, Bill, and you've alluded to this in bringing up Ginger Snaps is the notion of transformation.
Oh, perfectly. Yeah.
You know,
that
using
time and a month for her, huh?
Yeah. Using puberty to explore like the more, you know, as a monstrous metaphor, like for lycanthropy in that film.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And another film, and this one's also from the 80s, like Lady in White, that immediately came to mind for me was Philip E. Mora's 1982 film, The Beast Within. Have you seen this one, Bill?
Beast Within? Well, that sounds quite appropriate.
it's an odd little movie. The script was by Tom Holland, before Child's Play, before Fright Night, and probably before Psycho 2.
Yeah, I haven't seen this one yet. Ronnie Cox stars in it, right?
Yeah, and he and Bebe Bech play parents to, their son is 16 years old. He's played by Paul Clemens. And they return to, I guess, this town they stopped at for their honeymoon like 16 years prior. But on their honeymoon night, Bebe Bech was raped by a monster. Jeez. And what it turns out as being is that their son is the byproduct of this monster rape, and he winds up turning into a cicada. So it's very,
very Kafka, huh?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, Bill.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
I was actually thinking you were going to say something snarky there, and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Snarky. Fuck you, man.
But what's interesting is that the story mostly deals with the parents trying to uncover like the mystery of what happened and who attacked, the mother, and what's going on in this small town. That's kind of like a Stephen King small town. A lot of people have a lot of secrets, and it's like not many people there either. But it's also the story about the son's coming of age as he falls in love amid all of these growing pains that are coming about as a result of his origins. It's an interesting film. It's not perfect by any means, but it does go through the coming of age beats, and the father of the girl he winds up dating and falling in love with, he doesn't approve of him, and it's interesting, he doesn't approve of him for one reason, but then it turns out there's other reasons to be wary of of the relationship. So the special effects are really good in that movie. Lots of practical stuff. It's a really violent film, but it's pretty well done, I think. I think it's an interesting example of a horror film using those metaphorical qualities of adolescence to tell a interesting old fashioned horror story.
I like that. I like it a lot. I gotta see this movie.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Yeah. And it's funny because, I was wondering, like, what's the age limit on coming of age? When does it, because, before I was playing, and I was putting in coming of age horror, see what pops up. And, one of the things, Pumpkinhead, and I love Pumpkinhead. And I'm like, well, these people are, in college, they're driving cars, and is that coming of age? I don't think so.
Well, they do learn a lesson, but
the hard way.
Oh yeah,
the Pumpkinhead way.
Yeah, I don't know that I would. Yeah, I don't know that I would categorize that one either as such. Just because of what you said, they seem to. I don't know. Those fucking kids should have known better.
Yeah, those sons of bitches, get off my lawn. Anyway, but then you have the other extreme where you have a really young kid, you have it in The Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
with Cole, and you have it in Child's Play. I mean, with Andy Barkley, played by Alex Vincent, it's like, man, he's young, but he learned a hell of a lot real fast,
Well, you know what, Bill? That's a good one, because I was thinking the same thing, and especially it was that conundrum you were talking about. It's like, well, it is a coming of age film, but he's not a teenager. But I love the fact that, you have some of those tropes that pop up in coming of age films. You either have an absentee or a dead parent, which applicable to Child's Play. So you have a kid who's being raised in a single parent household. He gets this doll that he's crazy about. He wants it, he wants it for Christmas.
The
he
good
gets
guy's
it.
Doll. Yay.
Yeah. Irony. Yeah.
Yeah. I hate irony. I hate it.
But there's certain things in that movie where it's just like Andy and Chucky become like Like they become best of friends up to a point, and Chucky becomes Andy's confidant and vice versa, and all this stuff that parents like to dismiss. It's like, oh, the kid's just talking to his doll. He's like just playing pretend. That takes on a different sort of meaning with the Child's Play films. So
yeah, a little bit. And it's funny, years later, I mean, if you watch Cult of Chucky, you'll see, you know, Alex Vincent reprise his role as Andy. And it's like, you know, he's like gunslinger now. And like, you know, he's got a plan. He's going to lock and load. And, you know,
I got to say, Bill, I watched all seven of the Child's
Play. I know you did. I know you did. You need a special badge for that, merit badge.
You know what, Bill? What surprised me most was that I found most of the movies pretty consistent. I actually really loved Cult of Chucky. I don't care what anybody says. I had a lot of fun with that one.
Oh, I have issues, as you can imagine, but I did have fun with it as well.
I saw your comment on Facebook last night, and I was going to do something snarky like, the doll comes to life. That's totally ludicrous. It totally took me out of the movie.
Oh, man, I wish you were here right now. I would so smack the hell out of you. Yeah. You know, and the other, you know, coming of age movie that I had mentioned was, you know, The Sixth Sense with, you know, starring Haley Joel Osment as this little kid who sees dead people, as we all know. And, you know, his mom doesn't believe him. And now he's got this, like, you know, this counselor who's going to help him. And the funny thing is, this kid ends up helping the adults.
Yeah.
And the kid learns, like, I'm all right. And, like, you know, it's funny because even though, you know, Dr. Malcolm Crowe, played by Bruce Willis, you know, helps the kid out, you know, the kid comes into his own. He comes into his own realizations. And that's really cool because he was such a, you know, a sensitive kid and in more ways than one. He was a psychic sensitive as well as just a sensitive soul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the end, he ends up really helping out his mom and his new friend, Dr. Crow, and you know, and you know, he fixes life for himself, and that's really awesome. And again, you know, the missing parent scenario, just like in Child's Play, mm-hmm. you know, and it's funny, they're diametrically opposed, but I could actually see them now as some, like, if I had my own, like, theater, it'd be like, tonight's double feature, you know, The Sixth Sense and Child's Play. But what the frig is wrong with this guy? But I'm going, yeah, me too, man, you know.
Billy Crash will host a panel discussion afterwards. Yeah.
So why'd you put them together? Because it's my theater! No, go ahead, man.
It's Crash Theater. It's not your theater, you out in the audience.
Yeah, you piece of shit, get out of here.
Well, Bill, you brought up a good point there.
I did?
Well, there's sort of a mutual acceptance going on with between Cole and between the adults in the film. It's like... Cole comes to an acceptance of his extraordinary circumstances as a person able to detect what he can detect. I mean, he's... In some ways, he's like a very strong empath, I guess you could say. But like you said, the adults in the movie who, are maybe not coming to terms with their own personal tragedies and shortcomings, he helps them with that. So it's like you said, there is this trade-off that occurs. And something I like about Haley Joel Osment and his performance and how that character is written is that, you know, he's all dressed in his prim and proper suit and his father's glasses and all that stuff, but he doesn't come off as exaggerated per se. He's not one of those precocious kids that you sometimes see in coming of age movies that you hate because they're so unrealistically grown up. I think Shyamalan really managed to pull off a sense of reality with that character. So
I'm with you on that, man.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. And you reminded me of something else, especially when you used the word conundrum, because it was a key word in the film. Gore Verbinski's 2002 The Ring,
yeah,
where you have David Dorfman playing Aiden, whose mom is the hyper delicious Naomi Watts.
Oh, and, yeah.
And it's great because he's like, he knows he doesn't have a father. And, you know, but he's like, this kid is like, you know, whiz kid. You know, he's insane. He's off the charts. You could tell his like IQ is probably a million, you know. And it's great because his mother's, he's the logical guy. And his mother's very emotional, emotion first. And I just love the one scene where it's like, okay, honey, everything's okay. We found Samara. You know, we took care of her. What did you do? You know, like, she never sleeps. You're not supposed to help her. You know, and it's like, and it pretty much said, you ruined everything. You know, like, what are you doing? You know,
way to go, mom.
Yeah, mom. You just like you killed the planet. You know, like, you know, so his coming of age was quite interesting. And then he poses a wonderful question at the end of the movie, which I don't want to give away. But and it's like, well, what, you know, pretty much like a what do we do now question that raises a whole bunch of ethical questions. And it's great that he could see this and report on it. And it's interesting because it's more of a rite of passage. The whole movie is a rite of passage for her. And he was like on the track all the way all along, you know, which is really wild to see in a movie. It was almost like, you know, it was a reversal to a degree.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really enjoyed that.
Well, and you know, again, Bill, with that movie, you kind of have the absentee parent as well, though I believe it's Naomi Watts's husband. It's he's the guy who runs the the studio or whatever.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, so it's like he comes back into the picture, so there's that element of friction there as well, in addition to the stuff that comes out from the time sensitivity of the plot as well.
Yeah, Pauly Parrott's in there. That's his intern.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't remember her in that movie.
Oh,
okay.
Come on, man. Jeez, what's up with you, man?
NCIS, baby. You know, Bill, one I watched recently proper for the first time, and I liked it pretty well. I don't like it as much as some do, was The Stepfather from 1987.
Ah, yeah.
The script was by
Terry Quinn, man.
Oh, and he's fantastic.
He killed it, man. He owned that movie big time.
Yeah, and you know, for years what I'd heard about that movie was basically how great his performance is.
Yes.
And it is a great performance. Because he's essentially playing a couple different characters. His appearance changes three times in that movie.
Yep.
And it's, you know, there's nothing supernatural going on. He is just a very disturbed individual who he marries essentially into broken families. You know, it's like, oh, it's a single mom and a kid, and, you know, all is well. He's the perfect guy. Apparently in 1987, it was really easy to pick up a job on a moment's notice.
it ain't today, man. It ain't today.
I was going to say the rate at which Terry Quinn does this stuff and is able to be like, and then it's just like he decides he wants to kill this family because they're breaking with his illusion of the perfect family.
Yeah.
And therefore the only response to that is the total annihilation of the family. Like the opening scene of the film is very potent because he's we know what he is from the start because he's like washing blood off his face.
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves this house all clean shaven, dressed in a suit, carrying a suitcase. Then you pass by the foyer and you see like perfectly framed by the entryway to the living room is just where he's totally massacred this family that he'd been with. And 1 year later, he marries into another family. And what I thought was interesting about this film, and I didn't realize it was such a big part of it, was the fact that it's more about the daughter of his current family. It's more her coming of age story.
Jill Sholin's character, right?
Oh, my God. And she's such a cutie in that movie.
Yes, she is. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is really her story, because Terry O'Quinn's character, he doesn't get a backstory, which I think is a good thing.
Always agree. Always agree on that.
Yeah, from what I heard in the featurette on the DVD, there apparently was like a backstory written in for his character, and I think director Joseph Rubin decided, yeah, we're going to get rid of that.
Good man. Way to go, smart. Joe. Way to go!
Yeah. So I thought this was interesting because, you know, it's Jill Sholin. She's seeing a psychiatrist, you know, because her dad passed away. And, you know, she's still getting over things and she's dealing with the onset of teenage hormones and changes occurring in her life and trying to come to some semblance of acceptance with this guy who, for all intents and purposes, is a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Yeah, and the movie really exploits that kind of paranoia and that what-if feeling. And there were some scenes, like the scenes of Terry O'Quinn freaking out in the basement. Some of those scenes really hit home for me.
Mm-hmm.
In kind of personal ways. So I was like, the movie got to me in some aspects, but there's also a sense of humor to it as well. It's very dark, but
it's quite
yeah, it's there nonetheless. And I think by the end, it's really Jill Sholin's story, and Terry O'Quinn is just kind of he just kind of figures into it in his homicidal way.
Yeah, so. He's the monster that must be slain. He's the other, and yeah, and it's funny because she becomes, in a sense, like a final girl. And, you know, we've talked about final girls before, and it's almost like you could name one movie after another where if there's a final girl, it's usually some sort of coming-of-age story, because this young woman who's usually prim and proper and, you know, whatnot, and, you know, hasn't, you know, is virginal in some way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. and doesn't do bad things, has to, like, you know, suddenly do a real bad thing and probably commit murder to stay alive, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And find that inner strength and, you know, don't be nice right now. Now you have to kill, you know? It's like, okay, you know, lock and load, do whatever you need to do. Just don't go out on a lake in a rowboat, you know? That's all I'm saying. It's my advice, you know, for any,
Well, Bill, I know a movie you brought up when we were talking about doing this show, and we both have very strong feelings about it. Is the movie Dead Girl?
Yeah.
And this is it's definitely
rite of passage in reverse, maybe.
Yeah. Why don't you talk about this one a little bit and tell me how you feel it falls into this that categorization.
Well, this is a tough one. I we might have to do a spoiler on this because
if we're going to
explain or showcase what happens in this.
That's true, because we got to see where the one character ends up in the end.
Yeah, you know, Shiloh Fernandez is this, he plays Ricky, and he's like, you know, he hasn't like come into his own yet, but he's sort mm-hmm. of... He's sort of like, you know, he doesn't lack confidence necessarily. He hasn't gone that. He hasn't walked the walk yet. You know, he could talk the talk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he and a friend find this. Was that with JT originally, with the great Noah Sagan?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. Shiloh Fernandez kind of stands in his shadow. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, Noah Sagan, he's like the stronger of the pair in regard to confidence and everything else. You know, he's a step above. And they find this body, this dead girl played by Jenny Spain, pretty much undead zombie on a gurney strapped mm-hmm. down. And, you know, hey, dude, it's like, you know, can't we get free sex from this? And that's where the story goes. But, you know, Ricky has these crisis of conscience. And
yeah.
It's like, no, we still can't do it. It's like, she's dead, but she's still moving. So it's like, can you rape something that's dead?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But, and then, well, you know, I'm going to leave the ending out. But it takes this sinister turn. where it's like, Ricky, you son of a bitch, you know, it's not like,
oh yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I don't know if we need to go there, but it's like
the, no, we don't have to,
the hero becomes a zero in like, wow. It's like, it's like the whole movie's focused on the element of, you know, I think it talks, it really opens up a discussion about rape culture.
Oh,
I,
yeah.
I hate to even say rape culture. That sounds so hideous.
Mm-hmm.
But and also it's like when your hormones are revved up, are they just revved up or can you reel it in? You know,
mm-hmm.
And actually it comes down to actually, are you man enough to reel it in?
Well, and I mean, I agree totally with you, Bill. And I mean, especially considering, and not to get into it too much, considering all that's going on in Hollywood right now.
Oh my gosh, man.
Yeah, it's like the dam.
Tinsel's coming off the town, man.
Pretty much the dam cracked open.
Oh, man. Dustin Hoffman today. We have a Kevin Spacey. It's like, what the frig, man? You know?
Well, and the way that he, yeah, the way that he came out and explained that, yeah. But the thing with Dead Girl is, yeah, I totally agree with what you said, Bill, and I think what's interesting about the film is you got these boys who are just, you know, essentially meat bags of, you know, hormones. You know.
I love it, meat bags of hormones.
Pretty much, it's like, oh, we.
What a band name, dude.
We are the meat bags, and you suck. Yeah. But you know, it's something I've said before on this show, and what I think where the horror of the concept comes into is like, and going back to our initial general conversation about coming of age films, is how we plug ourselves into these characters. There are certain aspects of their personalities that are perhaps universal, and that's what makes you able to, oh, it's like I relate to the basket case in the Breakfast
yes.
Club or whatever, because yeah. I was the outsider. I can relate to Ricky in Dead Girl, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have been the guy who was like, oh, yeah, this can't go on. This is
right.
unnatural. We got to stop this. But you're constantly thwarted at every turn somehow, to the point where you wind up getting implicated further in it, because to a degree you're keeping silence in a way. You're mm-hmm. not coming out and telling, you're too afraid to come out and tell a grown-up, which I think he has the opportunity to at one point, but he just deflects it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the situation just escalates from there to the point where, like you said, you know, he's seen so much and done so much that he ultimately winds up in a twisted way becoming the thing he initially hated.
Yeah, exactly.
About the situation and that film, they don't. The sex is not appealing at all in that film.
No, it isn't.
And I think that was, you know, Trent Haga wrote the script, and I think it's a very clever script.
Clever, potent, disturbing, and a must-see.
Yeah, it's a movie that really sticks with you. There are many sequences in it that I just have vividly burned into my...
Oh, I know.
Burned into my brain, because it's just
I'm
so...
still effective. Going to therapy, man.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's not all shock value. It's,
no, no.
You know, it's not necessarily gore, but the scenes that are violent in that film are truly cringeworthy.
Yeah.
But it's more the horrors of the actions of these teenage boys and how, you know, maybe there is something to this situation and how it's presented, even though it is a fantastical situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still there's... You know, I'm sure we don't have to talk about real life instances of stuff like this happening with no. girls who aren't undead. So, yeah.
Yeah, girls, women, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
But, yeah, extremely potent film. And this is one of the most, well, not the most, it's a unique coming of age
mm-hmm.
tale for certain, a very strong narrative. And I love it though, man. It's an excellent movie. It's one of my top horror films of all time. I mean, how could it not be on the list, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the other movies we've been talking about. It uses, you know, it creates some interesting metaphors, and uses that to convey some greater truths about the human condition and, you know, humanity in general. So,
And, you know, for the most part, you know, there's a lot of movies I know we didn't talk about because, like, the rite of passage is formulaic, and it's like, you know, geeky kid becomes, you know, the hero. Yeah, you know, and it's like, yeah. All right. And because in real life, how often does that happen? You know, it's like, if you, depending, I mean, you could look at, like, you know, Bill Gates became the hero or something like that, you know, took a, you know, X number of years and, you know, college dropout and, you know, da-da, look what he does. He's the richest man in the world, you know, or.
Yeah.
You know, and that's great. But, you know, and I think a lot of it is also wishful thinking. It's like, yeah, I wish I could have been that kid. I wish I could have done that. But there's no vampires for me to go after in Fright Night. So I can't, you know, it's like, you know, I can't be William Ragsdale here and, like, save the day, you know, and, like, save my mom from this hideous character or, you know, the lost, you know, the Frog Brothers going after the Lost Boys and all of this stuff. And it's.
I think there's also something about the tone of these films, Bill. It's like you were mentioning the Lost Boys and Fright Night, which are a bit. I would say the Lost Boys, especially, is a bit more lighthearted in its approach.
It's all about hairstyle, Johnny.
Yeah, and maybe that's one of the reasons why I do not like that movie very much.
Oh God, it's the hair! Oh my God. I would, when it first came out, I was laughing at it. I was like, you give me a break, man. You know?
No, I'm more like Wesley Willis, like saying cut the mullet, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't take, oh, Jamie Gertz.
But you know, Bill, you have something like that has a lighter tone. Then you have something like Dead Girl that's much more.
Oh man, it's the complete antithesis. It's so dark and just.
Bleak and
and even like where Excision goes, you know, it's like, oh my gosh.
Well, and that one's an interesting one because that, like, a little like Ginger Snaps, only I think Excision had not a tougher time of it, but it was a bit more tricky because Excision was like kind of, it was like this contrast between gruesomeness and really dark comedy.
But very imagery-laden narrative, and it was just, you know, very captivating on what this... It was one of those movies that was like falling down to me. It was like you have this character that you're rooting for, and then you're like, oh, I'm rooting for the wrong person. And to a degree, that same thing happens in Dead Girl. And, you know, I like that. I like that. I love when you're like connected to a character and then it's like, oh no, I shouldn't be connected to that person. I'm not like him or her, you know?
Yeah. And, I totally agree with that. And, it's just really interesting to see like how some filmmakers handle this, the style of film, because, you know, it can come off as very cliched and very, you know, very been there, done that. And a film I really like, and I know a lot of people hate this one, and I get why they hate it. And it's because they hated the first one, is Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. You know, to me, this movie, outside of being my favorite of all the Halloween movies, yeah, I said it.
Go, Johnny, go.
Bring the hate tweets. Well, what I liked about this film, and, you know, people were pissed off because, well, they thought Rob Zombie's original Halloween, his remake, was an abomination. People were like, well, what is this, all this surrealistic bullshit going on in this sequel, you know, with the white horse and everything. And, you know, I was like, I think he did this movie totally right, because he does something that Carpenter never did, I'm sorry to say, with either Halloween 1 or 2 or mm-hmm. what any of the other filmmakers did with the subsequent films in the series, outside of maybe H20, which gets a little into Laurie Strode's psyche and history,
right.
is Rob Zombie uses it as a vessel to explore the character of Laurie Strode and of Michael Myers in a very, you know, subjective kind of psychological manner.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Laurie Strode survived this horrible Halloween, and 2 years later, she's kind of a changed person, you know. She's,
right, of course. She had her own rite of passage, yeah.
Exactly. She goes from being kind of the goody-two-shoes girl next door to being, like, sort of the tattooed, punked-out, you know, ghost of who she used to be. And, mm-hmm. you know, later in the film, she discovers that, oh, yeah, I'm the sister to, you know, this monster, basically, who...
Yeah.
killed all these people and killed my friends. And, you know, it really goes into like a sense of transference, like, mm-hmm. well, how far does the apple fall from the tree? And, you know, would these things be coming out if she didn't find out this information about her personal history? So I think it's a fascinating movie. I think it's extremely well done. And I think it, I feel like it's a film that really, really embraces character and understands character beyond the types that I feel were kind of the thing that bored me about Carpenter's 78 film, and even to an extent the sequel in 1981, which was a lot of just cannon fodder characters. Just, all right, yeah. Get to know, give them a few lines of dialogue, then kill them off because that's what we got to do.
Yeah, yeah. Keep up the body count.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean,
slasher film body count.
To me, like knowing the potency of Rob Zombie's previous films and how he kind of likes to go for the jugular, it was interesting to see him do this one, which kind of commingles the psychological with his very violent tendencies, and kind of synthesizes the two. He kind of makes the psychological rage. Mm-hmm. And just the feelings of rage, and, you know, he makes the violence complement those things. There's sort of a equal exchange going there.
I like that, man. That was great, Johnny.
Thanks, Bill. I'm sorry. I love that film.
I know you do. I'm sorry you love it, too. No. I actually have to sit down and give it another go, give it another whirl.
Oh, I didn't know you even watched it. Okay.
Did I watch it? Probably, maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I have, you know, Lords of Salem, John 5's tune stuck in my head. I can't help it. But,
yes.
No, I think it's, I, you know, coming of age isn't going to go anywhere. And, you know, we're going to still have more, you know, we're going to have more and more movies. And the thing is, you know, the writers have to step up their game and you know, look at what has come before them with things like, you know, Dead Girl and Excision and such, where, God, man, heck, you know, The Shining, talk about a coming of age, you know.
Or The Road, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the road no one ever wants to travel.
The road leads to nowhere.
Yeah, the road to nowhere for real, man. Cue your Talking Heads story song right now. But you know, as long as they step up their game and come up with something cool, you know, that could, you know, work, even if it's on a funny scale like Night of the Creeps or something like that.
Or
have that funny, cool, intense factor like, you know, Ginger Snaps and all, like, life will be good. But just like, don't do the status quo formula, you know, 1 + 1 = da-da, you know. Yeah, cut it out. You need to add stuff to that equation. Give us some more cool coming-of-age stories, you know?
No, and I agree, Bill. You know, like, the same year The Stepfather came out, I'm pretty sure it was the same year, that's when we had Hellraiser. And, you know, the more I think about Hellraiser, it's like, it's more about Kirstie's coming-of-age story, you know? And it's not altogether different from the dynamics of The Stepfather. You just got these, you know, sadomasochistic demons thrown into it.
Yeah, it's almost like a coming of age as an adult story. Again, like, you know, May would fall into that as well. You know, Angela Bettis playing the what I consider to be an iconic character. And, you know, trying to fit in, and, you know, and then she's like, well, if I can't find a friend, I'm going to make one, and like, wow. And but anyway.
Well, and again, that's like a character coming to like a personal realization, and that, mm-hmm, you know,
the hard way.
Exactly. And that is, that's realizing those things are what coming of age is kind of about. So
got some cold ones in there. Yes, I do. So
nothing freaks me out, Bill.
Johnny, I feel like after the show, I've come of age, and I've aged like a fine Roquefort cheese.
Well, Bill, you're like wine. I would just drink you up.
Oh, God, Johnny! Man! Wow! Holy hell!
it's true confessions night through metaphor on the last knock.
Oh, my God! Hey, that's fine, man. I'm fine with that. Now I want wine and cheese, so there we go.
Well, it's okay, Bill. I don't really like you like that, but, you know.
I don't care if you do. I'm fine. I'm fine. Oh, man.
I like you like I like my Skype connection most nights, so.
Okay. Working but at a distance? I have no idea what that means.
Actually, I was going to say. I was going to say the Skype connection is usually a metaphor for my mental state, and that's always breaking up and never consistent. So.
Oh, man. One day you're going to end up like going through the internet. You're going to be like Shocker instead of the TV. You're going to come through people's computers.
You know, something needs to happen. I want to piss people off. I would probably just hang out on Donald Trump's Twitter fucking shit up there. But I don't think he needs the help. But, you know.
Oh, man. Is it scream out time, Johnny? Are we there yet?
Sorry to get political. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Scream outs too. These are wonderful souls you could find on Twitter, and this is their Twitter handles first. Author Doug Ward, artist and writer. His titles have appeared on Amazon and Apple's top 100 horror books, and his oil paintings are his pride and joy. And he's also a Photoshop ninja. And you could check him out at dougward.space. The wonderful Devils with a Z, Delight 01. Who is she? She is Scarlet. Just your average goth chick, horror movie maniac, metal, rock and roll. Nothing's black and white. MIBIH. Anime, movie, and WWE DVD reviewer. And he's an amateur filmmaker, film buff. He loves silence, classics, world cinema, and Asperger's and OCD, and he's a pug owner. How cool is that? Out of Kent, UK. Go to mibih.wordpress.com to learn more. Hell Horror, all lowercase. Hell Horror. Why? Because it's hell. And as they say, join our huge horror community. Browse latest horror movies, films, and comment on vampires, demons, werewolves, paranormal, plus more. Go to hellhorror.com. Writing Reader. Who's that? She's fantastic. The most important thing about writing is to have fun. Damn it. I added the damn it. Worry about commas, point of view, tenses, etc. later. Right now, just start writing. Who said that? Liz Shaw. And you could go and learn more at thewritingreader.com/blog/. The great, the kind, the gentle, Matthew 669691. Who's that? Matthew Lopez. Big pro wrestling fan of comics, superhero, Doctor Who, Arrow, The Flash, Legends. It goes on. He's out of NYC. Lucky man. El Rey Network. And what is that? El Rey Network? Yeah, I know you know. El Rey, and so do our fans. El Rey Network awakens the renegade in everyone. Created and curated by Robert Who? Rodriguez, of course. And his collective, it's unfiltered kick-ass entertainment, and that is no lie. And they just released the Puppet Master Axis Extermination, or Axis Termination. I'm so sorry.
Wow.
And who's in that? Who's the villainous in it? The lovely, the vivacious, the delicious Tanya Kaye, the most dangerous woman in Hollywood. She's brutally elegant actress, burlesque headliner, raw vegan renegade. And she's the creator of the Pinup Hole Show. And she's out of L.A. And definitely go to IMDb and you'll find out why she is awesome. And we want to thank, actually, as well, Palco Designs. Who's that? That's Greg Palco. He did the Last Not
Last Knock logo for us. Can't even say our own show name right. He's a lover collector.
It's
and
the last knot, Bill.
The last... Nah. Lover. Man, it sounded like an Anthrax song right there. He's a lover collector and designer of horror. Man, his collection will knock you out. He's a super genius, and you could contact him at palcodesigns.com. The great Ron Shaw. Otherwise, you could find him on Twitter as Ron Gizmo. He's retired. He's a fantastic. He's a great poet, a great writer. Has an excellent show, excellent podcast, the Ron Shaw Redemption Hour. Go to ronshawmedia.com to learn more. And just two more, Johnny. The great Tracy_TR. What does she do? She's the owner of Scream Radio, and that's SCRM. Save the E for, I don't know, like on the spot. Wonderful songstress, great narrator. Check her out at terrorrecords.co/tray-cee.html. And finally, the wonderful Guy Ricketts with two T's. He's a storyteller through words, art, and photography, and he enjoys the thrill of creating art and photography while living a writer's life, one page at a time. Guy, keep it going. He just had a short story published, so congratulations to you, sir, which is awesome. In fact, just to let people know, that is called Bite of the Monkey Child.
Ah.
And you could find it in the latest issue of Dissonant Zine. So check that out. Also on Twitter. So there we go, awesome. Johnny.
Hey, Bill. I actually got a few myself.
Oh, wow.
The great Frisco Kid TX. Yeah. Constant listener, good friend, good guy. He shared our show, or he tends to share our show. Mm-hmm. And we're very grateful for that. He runs the Loud Green Bird website, which I am happy to be a contributor toward. Also Cryptic Pictures. Responsible for the fantastic low-budget horror film Mortal Remains, which you can check out on their website in a variety of formats now. I recently picked up the DVD, and they sent me some cool extras along with it. So,
Awesome.
And so check them out. They're great guys, and the movie is really good. And also, yesterday, Bill, constant listener DM Elms, who yesterday called CrashPalaceProductions.com her favorite website, and I was very taken aback. Very taken aback by that. And,
thank you, DM. Love you.
Yeah, and very thankful for that. So I told her that, and essentially what that means for me is I got to get off my ass and write something for Crash Palace Productions, because it's been a couple weeks. So
yeah, it's been hard because of school and stuff. It's hard to write. So,
well, and this week has been, for me, has been insane work wise. I have two things I want to write, and I'm just not getting the time to do it. So
I gotcha. And I'll tell the world, hey, you love horror, you're a horror fan, you want to write something for Crash Palace Productions, let me know. All you need to do is I would check out work by the great Johnny Numb on there, as well as Randy Broska, Paul J. Williams, and see what they've done. Check out, not to imitate style and all, but get an idea of what Crash Palace Productions is looking for. All right?
All right, Bill.
All right.
Well, where can people find you? Or did you just say where they could find you? I don't know anymore.
You can find me at CrashPalaceProductions.com and also at Crash Palace on Twitter. Also, Billy Crash Talk on Instagram. And it's sort of been revived. Crash Palace Productions page on Facebook. And also go to iTunes to check out this show and more. Johnny, what about you, man?
Yeah, in addition to CrashPalaceProductions.com, like I said, you can find my reviews when I'm not inundated at regular work at LoudGreenBird.com.
Nice.
And you can also find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but maybe when I come of age one day, I will add the H's.
Oh my gosh, man. People are like spinning in their seats now, Johnny.
I mean, the H isn't even pronounced, so I don't. I'm glad. I'm glad my name doesn't have the H. Not to, no offense to any Johns who have an H in their name, but I'm just like, it's a peripheral H.
Well, dude, I'm Billy Crash, and the fuck you is silent.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say you were Billy Kras.
yeah. Sorry, I'm that's it, man. That's it. I have to come of age and get some food. I have to kill for myself. I have to pick a carrot out of the ground or something.
Well, you know what they say, Bill. The dead Kennedys said a growing boy needs his lunch.
I'm going to eat some weird berries in the woods and see what happens. thank you, Jello Biafra. You're awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, it took me a second, but I got that one.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Okay.
Perfect coming of age music there.
Oh my god! Actually, it was, man. I love him. One of my favorites.
Too drunk to fuck. Yeah.
Well, haven't done that yet, but anyway.
Okay.
All right, Johnny. Have a good night.
All right, you too, Bill. See ya.
All right, bye.